This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Hello there, Editor-in-Chiefs. I'm Stephanie Flaxman, and you are listening to Editor-in-Chief, the weekly audio broadcast that delivers the art of writing updated for the digital age to help you become a stronger media producer. So I've talked a little bit in past weeks about, I've had little snippets here and there about philosophy of art, and so you've heard a bit of my views on the subject, but I wanted to bring in someone who is an artist creating media in the digital space and online to get a different perspective of what it means to be an artist in the digital age. So on today's episode, I'm going to share with you my conversation with Brian Formhalls, who is a photographer. He's also a podcaster and an author, and he's going to talk about all of the cool stuff that he's doing, and a lot of it is online for the audience that he's built. So here is my conversation with Brian Formhalls. Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, Stephanie. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I'm really interested in something that we were actually just talking about before we started recording. I liked our conversation, so I wanted to jump right in so we can get it on tape or digital, whatever this is. But I wanted to talk to you today because I consider you an editor-in-chief. And what was interesting was you were saying that you listened to the first episode of Editor-in-Chief and you identified with it. And that's how you thought of yourself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always thought of myself as an editor. Even I have a Tumblr called Photographs on the Brain, and I've done a lot of stuff sharing photography. And people would always say, oh, you're a curator of photography. And I consider myself an editor. And I take that seriously. And I take editors very seriously, too. It's like, I think it's an incredibly important job. And in terms of just an outlook on the way, you know, content goes out into the web, I think, you know, I definitely can tell the people that are editors and that think that way. So it's always been something that I've identified with internally. And I think even for a long time, I've always wanted to be, you know, an editor-in-chief or, you know, in some regards or another. You know, how we define that these days, you know, is, there's a million different ways to say, you know, different things that people do with content on the web. But I really like, you know, that term and the idea of the editor-in-chief. And it's, you know, it means that you are ultimately the decider of what goes out and what has relevance for you, you know?
Right. Because we talk about content shock a lot, that idea comes up. And at some point when everybody is producing content online, there has to almost be, you know, you really have to be intentional, I think. With what you distribute. What do you think is the difference between an editor and a curator, since you made that little distinction there?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I don't mind when people say like they're curating their lifestyle or things like that. You know, I think language evolves, and I'm not really too uptight about, you know, kind of down on people that way. But it's another respect for what real curators in museums do, which is an incredibly difficult job and requires a lot of education. And there's, you know, they're making more choices other besides just stuff that they like, you know. And a lot of times I feel, you know, essentially when people are curating on the web, it's like, here's stuff I like, which is great to share, and I'm all for that. But, you know, I really think you're doing anything else. So I think, to me, a curator, too, I keep it more in that, you know, I guess, revere professional kind of scope. You as an editor, as I'm a media person, and editors are all part of that big, you know, media stew, I guess, you know, and they're an important, you know, integral aspect of how stuff gets out to, you know, your audience, the public, or your marketing audience, or your art audience, whoever it may be. So I feel like, you know, editors are the people that have that kind of judgment in terms of what type of, is it news or content is going to be relevant for your specific audience, you know, and making those decisions, yes or no, you know, photo or no, not that photo. And somebody has to make that kind of ultimate choice. And that's the editor's job, you know.
Right. The specific lens through which that message is delivered, you know, it stops with the editor in chief, you know, whatever you want to call it. So you do a lot of different stuff. And I'd like to hear, you have a podcast and you have a book that you co-authored and you are a street photographer. Last I really checked or we talked, I haven't seen you for a couple of years, but yeah, I'd love to hear about some of the stuff you're doing and how that all came about.
Sure. So we can go all the way back to when I graduated out of college. I studied journalism or communication, and I didn't really want to go work for a small town newspaper. So I decided I was going to go more into the corporate world, and I ended up working on the internet, doing things with internet monitoring. My jobs have always, you know, revolved around the internet and media and marketing to some degree. I would say around 2007, when I grew up with blogs too, and I was always interested in the way blogs were transforming the media landscape and all that stuff. So I was jumping on that right away. Come 2007, when social media sort of started erupting, I was like, listen, I want to work on the internet. And if I'm going to do it, I think I have to go out and try to build my own brand and prove that I can do it. So I started a website called LPV, La Pura Vida, which basically where I would edit and share photography that I was finding on Flickr, because I was a big member of the Flickr community. So that's kind of where I started. I started out as a photography blogger and evolved the blog into a magazine, LPV magazine. I jumped on Twitter right away in 2007. I built a pretty large following with LPV. 2014 or something, Time named it one of the best art Twitter feeds. So I got a little bit of recognition for what I was doing with LPV. We published 7 magazines, which I was really excited about. But at the time, I started to see a lot of other people doing magazines, and I kind of get really anxious and don't want to do what everyone else is kind of doing. So I took a little bit off. I'd done the podcast for a season. I was kind of happy with it, but it really, from a technical perspective, it wasn't so great. So I started working with my buddy Tom, and we just launched, or last fall, we started doing season 2, and the LPV show essentially is me talking to photographers about their process and photo books. So it's a small niche. It's, you know, the photo book culture is booming, but it's not something that, you know, you're going to attract a huge audience, but it's, you know, it's something that I really enjoy. I love talking to artists. I love getting into their influences, their inspirations, how they work, how they come up with their ideas. And right now for me, the photo book is kind of, you know, that's the thing I focus on and what I'm most passionate about. So it kind of brings all that stuff together. Then I'm on vacation this week. I do have a day job. And if you look me up, you'll be able to find it. I do work in content marketing as well for a rather large photography brand. So basically, you know, I exist in this kind of like photography internet world in many different kind of ways. And I've been involved with that for, you know, going on 7 or 8 years now. So that's probably what I am first. And obviously I do love photography and I'm all working on my project, but I have no delusions. I'm never going to be a professional photographer or, you know, more showing galleries or things like that. I really do it as, you know, my love for photography and art and just how important that is to just me, my personal growth and just who I am as a person. You know, I couldn't possibly imagine not making photographs or trying to make art. You know, it really balances everything out for me. So, you know, I try to keep I try to keep busy, and I'm having no problems doing that these days.
Good, that's good. Well, no, it's a part of you. So there's no reason to stifle it, or at least that is what you discovered, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a cliche, but, you know, you hear it a million times, you know, if you're doing what you love, you're never working, right? You know, it's, and I've kind of like gotten that synergy in the last couple of years where I'm really, my day job keeps me challenged, and I love it, and I love what I'm doing, and it revolves around photography, so I'm right there. And then when I'm off the clock, I'm hanging out with amazing photographers and artists and talking to them or pursuing my own stuff. So it's like, I like being busy and I like having a lot of things to do. You know, I know for some people that multitasking can be difficult, but for me, it's like, that's my brain. You don't understand, you know?
You have to be all over the place and lots of different.
Yeah, I do. And obviously there's some drawbacks to it. When we were talking about editors before, I forgot to mention that the people I respect most of editors are copy editors. And I work with, you mentioned the book I co-published with Hat, which is called Photographer Sketchbooks. And in that book, me and co-author Steve McLaren basically looked at the process of 43 contemporary photographers and how they developed their project. And working with a copy editor on that just blew my mind. I could not imagine. I mean, writing for me is very difficult. And I put in the copy and sending it to the copy editor. I was like, oh, man, I'm so embarrassed. And like, after she went through it, I was like, man, I sound pretty good. I could be a real writer if I like actually worked with the copy editor and didn't just publish on Tumblr or WordPress, you know. So I, you know, and obviously we worked together as editors way back when. And so copy editors to me are really, you know, there's something amazing.
It's a good collaboration. And I bet that copy editor has a lot of satisfaction that she helped you produce something that was your true vision of what you wanted to release.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, she would constantly be saying, you know, without the writers, then it's just, you know, there would be nothing there. And she just has that admiration for writers and for language. And it's such a learning process. Just the things that they point out of the way you write and some things that you might say over and over again, or just different ways of phrasing. And man, it made me feel good about my writing. I wish I could, like I said, have that copy editor with me all the time. But yeah, it's just, attention to detail is not my strong suit. So I'm even more impressed by what they do.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, Photographer's Sketchbook. So that is, it sounds like you collaborate a lot because you have a collaboration going on with the podcast and the book that you co-authored involved a lot of other photographers. So you like that. You want to get in the mind of the artist.
Yeah, absolutely. Collaboration to me is something I'm always thinking about. It's something I always want to challenge myself on because it's incredibly difficult. And I've had collaborations go sour, they blow up or it doesn't work out. And you just kind of learn that that's part of the deal. You know, when you're dealing with artists, photographers that, you know, it doesn't work. You know, why does the band break up after their one hit album? You know, now I kind of like see it from the inside. And I just like the challenge. I like the challenge of seeing how other people think and then how those, your ideas and their ideas can coalesce and mix and turn into something new. And when I'm doing the podcast, the thing that always, the moment I know it's really working is when me and the person I'm interviewing get in that headspace where we're sharing ideas and we're developing it together. And to me, that's just so incredibly fun. It kind of goes back to, I did improv comedy when I lived in Minneapolis in the early 2000s. And that was almost like the most creatively fulfilling time of anything that I've ever done, just because working with five people in that kind of headspace is just amazing. So, it's something that I've always tried to do in everything that I'm doing is to work, you know, closely with people and artists and developing, you know, big ideas and those sort of things. So it's what I do, I guess.
That's funny that you mentioned improv because I've been thinking about improv a lot lately because I think it's such an important skill to have. And I, you know, just, this is, you know, podcasting is still somewhat new to me. And so I was thinking, man, those skills are just like, if you can really sharpen them, then you're on it. You're prepared for anything. So it's funny that you mentioned it. We met about 10 years ago and your roommate did improv too. This like memory just came back to me. That, right? Who was that? You don't have to say his name.
No, Pete. Yeah. Well, what was his name? Carl, maybe? No, I can't even remember.
Oh, okay. We don't need to reveal exactly who he was, but
it's just because I'm old. It's not, you know, I forget everyone's names. I'm terrible with names. Awful. it was Phil. Yeah, we moved from Minneapolis together, and he did improv, and it is amazing skills. I can't even. It's difficult to even kind of describe. And one of the important things is listening too. So you have to be listening constantly. And the key kind of phrase in improv is yes and. And I believe I read this. You know, you've used yes and before, where it's like you accept what your partner says and you try to build on it. You know, and it's one of those fundamental aspects of any sort of creative collaboration, it can apply to anything, you know?
Right. I mean, and that's, you know, it's such a widespread tip because it could also be the same in writing. I was thinking of, you know, screenplays, but also in content writing, every sentence from the headline to the first paragraph, everything has to push the story forward in some way that, you know, holds the audience is attention as and is engaging. So there, yeah, I think there's a cool writing tip in there. But yeah, and definitely with improv, I always think like you have to go with it. There can't be someone who's like, we're at a dentist office, and the other person is like, no, we're at my mother-in-law's 70th birthday party. You know, like
exactly. It's one of those things. Yeah, you when you're doing it's such a painful lesson when that starts happening and the teachers stop you and it's like no, you know. but yeah, it's. I don't, you know, I wish I was terrible at improv too, though, but it is something that I'm glad I did it for my own creativity because even when I'm out taking pictures, I kind of roam around and it's, you know, I go wherever the impulse kind of takes me. So I use improv in like almost everything. And even in content, I think you, in terms of content marketing, going out, what's going on the web is like you have to almost have that improvisational mindset because the ground is shifting beneath us so often, you know, and I've seen mm-hmm. those shifts happen so quickly. And if you don't have the ability to kind of like, you know, synthesize what's going on and react quickly, I don't know how you're going to kind of survive in this environment. So there's just, you know, there's so many reasons to kind of like take that mindset. And another big thing with that too, is just like releasing that fear. You know, you're going to screw up. You're going to probably be wrong, but you just got to kind of like bury that fear, you know, because everyone deep down has it in terms of, you know, marketing and advertising and all content, you know, it's just, you never know. So it's, yeah, you know, yes and embrace your fear.
Yeah. And I talk about preparing, not planning for an editorial calendar. I have an episode of Editor-in-Chief that I did about that, where, you know, you kind of have to be looking at the big picture, but you have to adapt and stay flexible. I mean, it just kind of with adapting and staying flexible, because for me, photography or street photography, like you said, when you're wandering around and things like that, like that to me seems a little bit of a solitary activity. But you found a way to really involve yourself with other artists and you enjoy doing that and you want to do that. And, you know, it sounds like something that has also pushed you forward in terms of what you do creatively. And so I just think that collaboration aspect of it, when I was thinking of photography as a very, I don't know, isolating, but just sort of, you know, more something you do on your own, equating that to how I am with writing and editing. And I don't think I've thanked you enough, but the last time I saw you, which was about 2 years ago, and I was going through a bit of I'd been working on my own for a while, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And you had a photography exhibit in Los Angeles that you were in town for. And so I was talking about, I was like, I don't know, I've been doing revision theory for a while. And, you know, I'm just kind of stunted in terms of what I can do on my own. And I was pretty in rough shape then. But you said, and I think almost like exactly you said, you just got to get in with the right people.
Oh, no.
And so really something just like that. And about a year later, I started working for Copyblogger. And so, but I thought you were right, it was very encouraging. I felt a lot of support from you in that moment. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was, you know, I've been following what you've been doing, and, you know, on the web and following along. I was like, oh, this is so natural. She's so good at that. That's like, it makes sense. But I also understood kind of like the struggles of I freelanced when I first got to New York, and it was really painful. I was not a very good freelancer. Like, some people have that in them and I don't. But what came from that was the people that I met through the web. And I mean, it's amazing. Almost every opportunity I've got in my career from art has been through the internet, you know? So it's always finding your tribe. And this is one of those like really old tropes from content marketing too, is like, you know, building your tribe and finding your people. And then, you know, I think just having the assertiveness to kind of reach out and say, yes, I want to be a part of this, you know, is very important. Sometimes it doesn't always work out, but a lot of times if you take the risk, you'll see that it happens. And yeah, I guess I guess you could call it, you know, maybe shameless networking, but I don't see it that way. To me, I'm always just trying to find, you know, people that kind of share my passions. You know, I don't necessarily always have to agree with them 100%, but I want them to be able to challenge me and kind of like take me to a different place. So yeah, it's always, you know, get in with the right people, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really remember, you know, I didn't know what that meant for me at that time, but I knew exactly what you're talking about, because one of my struggles was just, you know, I was doing everything by myself and I felt just overwhelmed by that. And again, that I wasn't moving forward. I did a lot of stuff that I was proud of by myself, but you reach a point where you're just, you know, I can't do anything that I'm really going to be proud of next by myself. So I started thinking about, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? And for me, you know, who are these right people? And I had been a member of the copy blogger audience for a while, and we don't need to get into that whole story about how that happened, how I came on board here. But it was very, it changed a lot of things, and it was exactly what I was looking for. So, I mean, even people who are happy, not that I wasn't happy, but, you know, just I really admire what you have done to find the balance between doing your own thing, because you're very, you know, self-directed, you know what you want to produce, you want to execute on your vision, but then also understanding the value of incorporating people and audience, you know?
Yeah, you know, audiences, I think about audience a lot, and I actually have people kind of ask me kind of about it, and sometimes they're stupefied what I say. It's like, I, you know, on my, for the LPV stuff, and on my photography, is I don't necessarily always understand my audience, and I don't know that I necessarily want to, you know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something to me, it's that tension between being driven by, and I say this at work a lot, is like, we are them, you know. It's a we. If you stay true to who you are and kind of put that out, like, you are the person listening to what you're doing, you know. So I think part of that is like, I always try to stay true to kind of like my intuition and say, yes, this is the kind of stuff that I'm really interested in. And then hopefully the people are attracted to that. But in terms of like, do I necessarily know exactly who they are on the photography level? I don't. Sometimes it's interesting who comes out of the woodwork and say, oh, we love the podcast, or I've been following your Tumblr for years now. And it's, you know, I get lost in that black hole, like, you know, forever. But I just, you know, I don't even know, how would you even know? Like, I can look at the raw numbers of who's following me on Twitter, but I just don't know if I can ever really know who they are. But I assume that they're attracted to what I'm doing because of what I've done. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there, right? So it's an interesting dynamic, thinking of trying to think about audience and your relationship to an audience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to attract the right audience. You don't want everyone, and you obviously shouldn't try to please everyone with your content or what you're producing. But yeah, like you said, if the more you are yourself and you become the type of audience member, like, you are your audience member, you are who you'd want to attract, right?
Yeah, that's 100%. And I mean, I had a good friend who, my friend Paul Kwiatkowski, he was just on my podcast, and he was talking about, he wanted to write the book that he really wanted to read. And that's what got him like over his writer's block, is like, he was trying to be a different type of writer who would appeal, you know, to this broader kind of literary crowd. And he was like, no, that's not the book I actually want to read. So he wrote the book he wanted to read, you know, understanding that if he's like that, there must be other people that way too. And I definitely agree that I'm, even on my podcast, it's a small little podcast, and I'm totally happy with that. And we've talked about things we could do to try to build a bigger audience. And I kind of like push back against it. I'm like, but I don't know that I want a bigger audience. You know, I want, like you said, I want the people that are really into what we're doing and who will sit and listen to an hour long, you know, rambling conversation between two photographers, you know? So yeah, I think getting the right core people is the way to go. And just, I don't know. I think, on a personal level, trying to scale something I've learned is incredibly difficult. You know, you can get to a certain level with something, but in, you know, after a while, you really need tons of resources to kind of push something through. You know, we see all these big success stories or blogs and those sort of things, but I think it's you know, those like overnight breakthroughs in terms of podcasts and blogs, and that's like becoming incredibly difficult to do these days. So I always try to like, you know, stay humble or, you know, stay satisfied with, you know, my little audience. Cause it's like, I'm just thankful anyone will listen to it and give us a time of day, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, scaling and staying true to what your original ideas were, that's a really big challenge too. You said something, ask you something that was very interesting about the people who listen to you and you don't, oh, your friend who wrote the book.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so I hear so many writers say that. I think that talking about, because I have a philosophy of art book where I talk about tattoos, and it was the same thing for me because I was familiar with a lot of books about tattoos that were more about people's personal reasons for getting tattoos and things like that. But that's not the book that I wanted to read. I wanted to read more of a philosophy of art take on, you know, what is art? If we call something art, what is it and what isn't it? You know, like, how do you define art? So, and I wanted to explore that through tattoos, something, you know, a visual form of expression, if you want to say expression. So that's what I did there. So I can totally relate. Do you have a definition of art?
Do I have a definition of art? I mean, you know, I guess at its core level, it's, you know, human expression of our existence. I don't know. That kind of, I mean, I guess I don't want to sit and like, you know, say it has to be, because when you study art, you kind of like, you get to that point where it's like, well, yes, everything can be art, but I guess I stick more to like, it is something that is created, you know, with the intent of, you know, moving someone emotionally, intellectually, or, you know, aesthetically, you know, with something that's created, whether it be like music, you know, visual or what have you. So I definitely think there's, you know, room for everyone to be an artist. I believe in that everyone should embrace that side. And I believe everyone does have that artistic impulse. And, you know, I think it's healthy for everyone to kind of push it. But I'm also a little bit of a snob, you know, I like really good artists who, you know, they think deeply about this stuff and they can kind of execute on a different level than, you know, maybe me just wandering out and taking photographs. So again, I think, I don't know, maybe this sounds like I'm being too dogmatic about like authority, but I do respect people that kind of, you know, put in the time and really dedicate themselves to the discipline of, you know, photography or art or what have you. I'm not saying you need a certain pedigree to do it. You know, obviously anyone can come up and amaze us, but I definitely think those people that do make a full commitment to it. I always, you know, I talk about, and maybe this isn't the best analogy, but I always say they're, you know, they're addicts and obsessives. You know, I know my people when they are addicted to their art and they're obsessed with it, you know, and that's might be an uncomfortable analogy, but to me it really is. The people that are just deep into photography or art, they're just crazy obsessed with it. And it's an almost like an addiction. But of all the things to be addicted to, I think creating art is probably one of the better ones.
Right. I mean, how can you argue with that? I mean, it's a tough question. I think that's why the question fascinates me so much, because it's like three simple words, what is art? But it's really complex. And yeah, I agree with what you said. I would tie it back into audience again. I'm really big in the audience's role in a piece of art. I think that the audience's role is almost bigger than the creator's role. Because I think once the creator releases it into the world, it takes on a life of its own that the creator couldn't even have imagined. And for me, that having that interaction and having that audience to receive the work is a big part of art, because everyone interprets art or some sort of, you know, a form of art based on their own worldviews. And so, so to me, that's kind of a critical component. I don't put it so much. I mean, probably creators or artists don't like to hear that. Yeah, and I'd have to be outside myself and see how I'd react to me saying that.
I think you're absolutely, it's a great observation, absolutely. And I think that, you know, because again, it's like we all consume art too, you know, whether it's TV or the way we go to it, and like how, trying to understand how important it is to you as an being in the audience too, right? There isn't any artist alive who also isn't, a fan or, of art themselves too. You know, it's impossible to exist in that bubble. So I think it's something I struggle with too, is like fully understanding why something resonates with me. It's kind of why I can't be a critic. You know, I've had people kind of push me in that way, like maybe you should review books and things. I'm like, I'm not so good at necessarily telling you exactly why a book or a TV show or something appeals to me. So that's something I've been trying to work on the last couple of years, is really digging into the nitty gritty of what impacts me, as a member of the audience, for whether it's photo books or it's TV or what have you. And just like asking myself, like, why are you into that, man? You know, what's going on there? And sometimes it gets uncomfortable, it's like, why are you obsessed with these kind of TV shows or this type of art? You know, what is it about that? But I think you have to ask those questions of yourself if you want to grow,
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's very fluid because you're producing art for someone else to interpret, and you're also interpreting other people's work and being inspired by it, or maybe not so into it, but that's your reaction based on, your mindset, your worldview. So yeah, it's an interesting process.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I love the web too, is those network effects. So like how we're getting all of this information, various, on Tumblr too. I'm big on Tumblr. I just love the crazy kind of like weird flow that happens in my dashboard of just seeing all of these different glimpses and ideas and those sort of things. So, I mean, there's smarter people than me writing about the network effects and how all that is impacting culture. You can get into like social justice movements and all of that sort of thing too. It's just, there's a lot going on these days, and I feel sometimes bad that I can't keep up on everything. And maybe that's just my delusional internet mind again saying I can conquer it all. You really can't. You gotta kind of stay in your lane, as they say.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to stay sane, so that's more, I'll rhyme it. What did you say? Stay in your lane. And then I added, if you want to stay sane.
Exactly. There you go.
I like rhymes. Rhymes are fun.
That sounds like a book you could write.
Sounds like a book. Oh, wow. Well, okay. I'm going to have to write that down. I'm going to have to expand on that idea.
I need to put out a challenge or anything.
I know. I don't have to take everything as a challenge. But no, I was going to tie all of that in back into online too with, your just opportunities to have an audience and get your work out there and to be an observer and to be inspired and just, it's a pretty cool world we live in.
Good time to, interesting. We live in interesting times.
We live in interesting times.
This phrase, we live in interesting times. Or be thankful you live in interesting times or whatever it
is. Be thankful you live in interesting times. Yes. That helps sums up the internet for me. So this was awesome. I want you to tell everyone where we can find you online.
Sure. So Twitter, it's Brian Formals, at Brian Formals. I have my main photography blog is an aggregation blog. It's called Photographs on the Brain. A lot of quotes from articles and, images that I like, books I like. And then the podcast is lpvshow.com, and we have a blog there too, blog.lpvshow.com. We do behind the scenes photos. We share the photo books right on the blog that we discuss, and then, work from the photographers that, we're interviewing, those sort of things. And, once you get to those places, you'll find all the other tentacles to the Instagram, the Facebook, and all that stuff. It's really hard to pitch all of that these days, isn't it?
There's a lot to pitch. Well, I will put all of that in the show notes that I have in the blog post that will go along with this episode. So it'll be easy for people to find it there. Oh, and I wanted to just add one more thing about your podcast that you told me earlier about, because you record your interviews in person. So you get like a cool New York vibe with chaos in the background. Is that what you're going for?
So we do it at my buddy's place in Bushwick, and we've had the pizza man delivery in the middle of the podcast. We've had trumpets playing from the apartment next door, and dogs barking, and roommates coming in, and so it is very kind of chaotic. And if Bushwick, Brooklyn, that's sort of like the mecca of like hipsterdom these days, so it's a very interesting neighborhood. And I really like incorporating kind of that New York element to it. I just feel like, me and Tom say that we're taking a photograph of a conversation. We're trying to capture like that moment of what's going on. So yeah, it's been interesting. I don't know. I don't listen to my podcast, so maybe people get annoyed with it, but that's another story.
Well, I like the raw. I like the raw and authentic vibe. Things don't always have to be so polished, which is not what a copy editor should be saying, but I will take myself out of my copy editor role for a moment. And just artistically, I like the raw and unpolished sometimes. So
yeah, and like that actually ties back into our audience, because I know my audience would be into it. If I was trying to reach someone else, I would, you know, maybe take a different approach to it. But I know my people, I think.
That's good. Know your people. Thank you so much, Brian, for talking to me. I appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
If you are an artist who creates digital media online, you may want to check out the Rainmaker platform. Editor-in-Chief is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. I hope you will join me next week for the next episode of Editor-in-Chief. You can catch all my episodes on editorinchief.fm. And if you'd like to leave a rating or review of the show, you can do that on iTunes. I would very much appreciate it. I'm Stephanie Flaxman. Thank you for listening to Editor-in-Chief. Now, go become one.